Welcome to the Consummate Athlete Podcast, where we explore what it means to be a well-rounded, happy, goal-crushing athlete. Every week, myself, sports journalist Molly Herford, and cycling coach and kinesiologist Peter Glassford interview experts and chat through all of your training questions. We're excited to have you along for the ride. Hello, hello. Welcome back to a bonus episode of the Consummate Athlete Podcast. Peter, I'm not going to ask how you are because this episode is not about you.
Okay. It is about knee pain and poems.
It is all about knee pain and poems. So I have my good friend, my first Strong Girl publishing author, Mackenzie Myatt. We put out a book with her back in the fall called In Defense of Big Dreams. It's fantastic. We'll include a link in the show notes, but just beautiful poetry all about just being a woman in sport. Just so much good stuff in there. I love it. I flip through it when I'm trying to get motivated to get out for my rides or runs. And yeah, I was just super excited to get to work with her. Less excited about the reason for doing this episode. But so Mackenzie had been dealing with a lot of knee pain and time off the bike because of it. She's also a pro cyclist. She's doing a lot of road racing this year, but is also a mountain biker. We actually met her back when she was very young new rider at a camp we were coaching in California years ago. And we've stayed in touch ever since. But anyway, in this episode, we are just kind of talking all about this recent experience with knee pain she had. She actually was the reason I bothered Peter about getting Greg Lehman back on the podcast to talk about knee pain in this week's episode, if you haven't checked that out. And because Mackenzie is both a cyclist and a poet, it also prompted her to write about it in poetry form. So we have her read the poem she wrote about it, which I love. Okay. Yeah, and we're just kind of talking through what her journey has looked like with figuring out this whole knee pain situation. You know, it's not that she has all the answers. She's not a chiro or a physio or anything, but I thought this was an important episode because it's one of those things that all of us are going to deal with at some point in time, whether it's a hamstring or a quad or a knee or whatever.
That's right.
So I think it is it's fun to hear how someone else navigates this, especially someone, you know, where this is actually a big part of their livelihood. And this is a huge, you know, part of their goals for the year, and seeing how they've had to, you know, shift and change things. I think it's just really cool to kind of see that side and kind of get honest about what it looks like.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's sometimes interesting to hear different people's experience, right? If you've had pain, knee pain specifically, or just any sort of cycling related pain or running or whatever kind of pain you got, it's sometimes interesting just to hear, you know, someone else has had pain too. Right. And then, you know, the poem may resonate with you, which is great.
Resonated with me. And again, I feel like I manifested my own knee pain from doing this episode and the Greg one and all that. So thankfully, I think mine is mostly sorted out at this point. We'll see.
Now, in this episode, does she speak towards, I know when we were talking offline with her, she was speaking a bit towards how like the pain got worse during like a stressful period. Does she mention that? Do you recall?
Yeah, we talk a lot about that.
And that's, you know, if you go back and you do listen to the Greg Lehman podcast, that's sort of the interesting thing with pain is it's not always strictly biomechanical that like, you know, this bone is ruminated on this bone, you know, that can be a piece of it, but there also are these other factors that can modulate the pain, you know? And so that's, I think, an interesting thing is to hear someone, as you say, who isn't a physio, who's sort of identified that this then did happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think all of us can probably relate to don't think about pink elephants. Like I know for me, if I'm on a run, I'm really telling myself like, stop thinking about your knee. Like, do not think about your knee, because the second you start focusing on that place that you've been having that like niggling, like lingering pain.
Yeah. They call that, you know, can be catastrophizing is where that could go. Yeah,
every
for sure.
Tiny
yeah,
like, little.
This is the worst knee pain that the world has seen.
Yeah. And, now it's an 11 out of 10 when, you know, if you actually calm down rationally, it's actually like a 0.5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not to ignore everything, right? Certainly there are things that are red flags that you need to go get help with. But, you know, once those have been ruled out, the idea is that then, you know, we can take this pathway to getting you back to the movements you love. This is very Greg Lehman and movement optimism. You don't have to stop running or riding. There might just be a different strategy we have to take as you ease back into that and sort of like take different things. Like, you know, it could be as simple as mixing up cadence or something like that. It might be running a little less time than you're used to, but more often. So there's lots of these different strategies. You know, it might be including strength training, which we love as well, in the mix as well, just to get a bit of different exercises and variety in there as well. But this is the idea with movement, is that there's lots of options.
Mm-hmm. I love it. All right. Well, let's get into this episode with Mackenzie Myatt, and definitely check out her on Instagram. And of course, make sure you check out In Defense of Big Dreams over at stronggirlpublishing.com.
Give us your racing background and like kind of where you are now in your career and what's going on?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm originally a mountain biker. I grew up in Nova Scotia. And I was chasing the cross country national team and cross country World Cup circuit dream for a long time. I had a lot of amazing experiences with that. I got a cycling scholarship to go to the Savannah College of Art and Design for university in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'm in Atlanta right now, but I came down to Atlanta in 2016. And that was really incredible, impactful experience. I got to race mountain bike, cyclocross, road for the school, multiple national championships, national championship titles, podiums, traveled all over the US, which was really cool. My husband, our tour through that. And then there's COVID. And everything kind of, well, it definitely slowed down. And I think everyone had their own challenges during COVID. I definitely had some big ones. So there was definitely a lull. I don't know if a lull. I don't know what to call it.
A lull, yeah. Great silence, I think. Yeah.
And I realized that I could not get back to, I don't know if even get back to where I was. I basically realized I wasn't headed in the right direction with why I was racing, what kind of training I was doing, that all combined with, like, what kind of job do I want to have? What do I want my life to look like? I think a lot of people, you know, really thought about that for the first time in a long time during COVID. And I got a new coach, my husband, and basically the mission became fall in love with cycling again. And
that is such a good mission. I love that.
And that is the subject of my book, In Defense of Big Dreams. Yeah, so we did that. Obviously, there's a whole story behind that, but we basically mission accomplished.
Okay, we have to pause and ask, like, how is being coached by your husband? Because that is something that Peter and I will not do, strictly because I'm a nightmare. Like, it has nothing to do with him. He's a fantastic coach, but I'm terrible. So how has that gone for you two?
Yeah, it's been amazing. It's very collaborative. You know, a lot of... It's more like he guides me, you know, and shares experiences and challenges that he's had in his own career and can make suggestions. But it does, like, I ask him for advice, but it is still very like, okay, what do you want to do? Like, how are you feeling? He says one of the biggest things is that he just sees me every day. So he knows, like, what kind of state I'm in, how healthy I am, where my head is at. All of these things that I used to write huge, like, essays on Training Peaks that I thought was describing all of this stuff. But I think it's just different. I mean, especially someone who knows you inside out, I mean, better than anyone else in the world.
It's like having, like, a built-in human, like, whoop strap that, like, actually just checks on everything.
Yeah.
That would actually be a really fantastic, like, back and forth, like, research project where you, like, wore it and you had to, like, he had to guess what your, like, score would be and see, like, which one was more accurate. I feel like he'd probably win, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say another big piece is he believes in me, which is really powerful.
100%. Yeah. We often talk about, like, almost the most important role a coach can have is just being someone who, like, genuinely believes in you and, like, cares about your results. And I mean, often, unfortunately, you know, we don't have spouses who are capable of that, but that's where the coach comes in and, like, is helpful, right? It's someone who isn't you that cares about your dream so much, even more so when it's your spouse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So the question number one, did you fall back in love with cycling? And where, I don't know why Zoom does this, did you fall back in love with cycling? Did it work? And like, where did it put you in this past year? Because I know the story, but our listeners don't.
Yeah. So yes, I did fall back in love with cycling. And how we did that, so what I'd say one of the major concerns that I had before was, have I hit my peak? Is this as fast as I can possibly, is this as strong as I can possibly be? Which would have been pretty sad because I felt like it actually wasn't very strong. You know, obviously.
Having ridden with you, I can say you were pretty freaking strong. So.
Yeah, but compared to where I thought I should be and what I thought I was capable of, I was not close to that at all. Yeah. So one of the things was, okay, you either have this internal belief or you have been told by other people that you cannot or should not do long, hard efforts. And we're just like, let's see if that's true. So the goal became, it's kind of funny, but like, let's see how big of a hole we can dig. Like, if we do the complete opposite of what I've been told to do, will I burn out, like they've been saying? And the answer was no. The answer was I got really freaking strong, and it was really cool.
I love it. I love it. And you also switched, not switched disciplines, but you have shifted the nature of your racing. You added some crit racing. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that came later. I would say that came like 6 months later. That was not really the plan, but I was generally feeling a bit burnt out on mountain biking, or at least the way that I was doing it. So one goal that I had for sure was a mountain bike stage race, because that was also like the opposite of what I'd been doing. Like, okay, it's endurance, it's hard, it's just all around like, oh my god, hard, like I don't know if I can do it, but I want to try, you know? And I wanted to be able to get strong enough so that I would be able to enjoy it, because I hear these amazing stories about stage races, but I could also imagine myself very easily doing it and being miserable.
Yep. Yep. 100%.
Yeah. But so the getting into other disciplines kind of came more from like, we ended up down here in Atlanta, Georgia in the spring. I don't know. Last year. It's only last year.
I know. It feels like years, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a really healthy crit scene down here, like regional crit scene. And when I say regional, it's like a professional scene series.
I'd say like you're in the place for crit racing in the US. Like, yeah. If you're going to be a crit racer, this is the hub. Like, yes, there are big, yeah, races in other places, but the most consistent, like big races and like frequent races happen down here.
Yeah. Yeah. So we went to watch one because we had friends racing and Artur wanted to try some night photography, and I was watching it, and there was this hill in the course, and I was just watching the field get blown apart, and I was like, man, I think I could do that. It's like, you know, you got a funny feeling like watching something, like, I don't think I would get dropped right now.
Yep, yep.
So I really wanted to try it, even though I hadn't done anything like that since before COVID. And I actually was never really a fan of crits anyway, because the collegiate crits were pretty sketchy. You're nodding.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that well.
Yeah. So I was pretty turned off of it, but I was just like, I don't know. I want to give it a shot. I want to do something completely different. Also, in the background, crits, another thing as someone of my size, you know, people don't, they're like, yeah, you probably shouldn't do that. You know, like this is, you know, it's all like, rah, like big power, high speed. You know, that's not something I think of as like classically like Mackenzie, you know, I'm a quiet person.
Yeah, that's actually, yeah, you're right. As you say it, it does sound like it would be like out of character. I mean, obviously I know better, but I could see that being like even some like a voice that would probably be in your head, like at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I was just in this mindset, like that whole last year was like, I'm going to do everything different. I'm going to do stuff that I used to be scared of. I'm just going to see what's possible. And I was able to have an open mind and give it a shot. And I, you know, I'd never done a whole lot of cornering in the drops, so I didn't need to, but I was like, okay, I gotta figure this out. So I, you know, practiced in the neighborhood, and thing is, I was strong, which I keep going back to this. Being strong makes so many things easier, like things that I didn't think were fun are actually, it's like, oh, no, that is fun. like being on the road, like, it is fun if you can go really fast. It sucks if you're slow. Does
100%. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, I got in there and I was strong enough to be near the front, and I was skilled enough to be comfortable in the corners. And I was just like, man, this is really fun. I'm enjoying this. I can do this. You know, I see some opportunities. The first crit I did, they have this thing called, God, they have, a sprint, a preem on the second last lap. I forget what it's called. Anyway, it's kind of a suicidal move, because if you go for that, you're likely not going to win. But we were coming up to it, and it was a slight incline, and I was like, I think I can get this. So I just went for it, and I got it. I won like $400. And then I looked back, I had a gap, and I just kept going. And it was just incredible. And of course they caught me, but there was like half of the lap, I was like, I could win this. Like, and that's crazy feeling. So like, imagine if I planned it a little bit more. Like, yeah. So I was pretty hooked after that.
I love that. I always remember racing the Tour of Somerville crit, like, 10, 12 years ago, I got a sprint preem. And I remember afterwards, Laura Van Gilder told me that I did a good sprint, and it was literally the best moment of my entire life. Like, forget getting the preem, like having Laura Van Gilder say like, good job in that sprint was like,
yeah,
genuinely just like, I was like, could you please sign this paper saying that you said that to me? I will put that on my wall.
Yeah.
It's never happened again, to be clear. I'm not a very good sprinter, but in that moment.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, okay, so this whole crit thing really has like transformed your cycling. Now you're on a women's like road team for this season.
Yeah.
And here is where the like bummer part comes in. Now we're dealing with this knee thing. So let's flash forward. That's a big part of what we want to talk about here, is this whole knee situation that you find yourself in. What's the background? What's the story? When did this start? What's happening?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to try to be concise about this. It's going to be a little difficult. But just the backdrop of before that happened, I was doing really, I had a pretty heavy schedule. I did a full cross season. I ended it with 2 UCI races here in Georgia, which I won, which is awesome.
I was going to say, with back-to-back wins, putting that out there.
Yeah, and the whole, I guess, last month of the cross season, I was also doing Zwift Academy. Because, why not? Which
of
is whole
makes total sense.
Other thing, actually, that I wrote about, as an article about that. But, so, heavy block of, like, racing and basically like crazy power tests. And we're down here in Atlanta, and we were like, okay, you should take a break after this. Like, this is, that was a lot. And we'd also started thinking about immigrating at that point. Basically, I took like a week off. And then I started training again, because there's these really amazing group rides in Athens, Georgia, that I'd always wanted to do. I'd always wanted to do like most, a whole bunch of them, you know, like kind of go consecutively, get to know people, be part of the community. There's a great group of women who, like, strong women who do that ride. So it's like, okay, these are my people, you know, I want to be where like the crew is. And there was an Athens WBL coming up like 2 weeks after I started riding again. And I was so nervous about it, because I knew I didn't really have the fitness to do a 5-hour ride with like attack zones. But I really wanted to do it. I wanted to be part of it. So we did. And somehow I got through it, and it was fine. Like, it was actually fine. I was expecting to hit a wall. I didn't. It was actually good. But the next day, was my knee was super sore. Like, my kneecap. And I was like, what the heck? Okay, I guess I screwed that up. But I thought it would be, like, a few days, you know? I was like, oh, 3 days off, it'll be fine. You know, this is a blip. And it wasn't. It was quadricep tendonitis, pretty full blown.
So how did getting, like, what did getting that diagnosis even look like? Because, I mean, so many cyclists have knee pain. Like, what, at what point were you like, okay, I clearly need to, like, talk to someone about this because it's not going away? And, like, how did you find help?
Yeah. So first of all, I reached out to my aunt, who's an osteopath.
Nice.
And she gave me some advice, applied some, I think I waited about a week after that. I was like, I think this is a little more complicated. So I reached out to my physio from home, who's known me for a very long time through several injuries. And we tried to do diagnosis. And at first you and I have already talked about this, about describing exactly where the pain is. It's actually really difficult.
It's super hard, right? Like, it's such a weird thing. You're like, it's my knee. Come on.
Yeah. You think it's pretty straightforward, but okay. You say like, okay, the top of my knee. That could be if your knee is bent, like the part that if you put your hand flat, like on your quad, and then push it forward, like that bit, which is what actually hurt. But if you tell most people the top of my kneecap, they think like the center of your kneecap, which would actually be patella tendonitis. And that's what we thought it was at first. So I was doing exercises for patella tendonitis for, I think, almost 10 days. And then I was like, you know, this isn't getting any better. I reached out again. He was like, tell me where it hurts again. And he was like, oh, that's not patella tendonitis. That's quadricep tendonitis. You need to be doing something else.
Oh, no.
So I started doing that. But I had actually, that was really tough, even though it sounds like a small change, you know, just do slightly different exercises. But I'd been going so full gas on, like, taking care of it. Not just one way, but, like, icing it, elevating it, heat, trying not to have my knee bent too much, which is actually really difficult because you don't realize how much you're just sitting most of the day. Even if you ride or you walk or you run or whatever, like, that's still a very small percentage of your day. The rest of your day is, anyway, all this stuff, thinking about it, just constantly thinking about it, wondering if it hurts, if it's getting stiff, you know, if I should move anything, just worrying about it, doing these exercises. And then it was like, oh, you've been doing the wrong, you're doing the wrong thing. It took like a few days of doing absolutely nothing because I was so fed up with it.
Well, and I think this like does lead to like the very good point of like, especially when you're doing virtual consults, I think like being able to have that like original, like initial talk be so specific and like being super clear, I think it's like an actionable thing our listeners can take from this is like, if you do have the issue, you have to be so, so clear on where exactly it is so that you can get the like help that you actually need on it versus doing the wrong exercises for 10 days, which feels incredibly demotivating for sure.
Yeah. And I was like, I was also going full gas on like doing core at that time and back exercises because I'd had a back injury that flared up during the cross season. So I was like, okay, now I'm going to take care of this too. And I was just spending like hours a day like trying to fix myself and it wasn't working. Which I'm sure a lot of good was still happening, but it was like the main thing that I was, the goal was like not happening. So.
Yeah. Okay. So where are we now? Like this started, you know, a couple months ago at this point. We're, you know, late February. You actually have a gravel race coming up like this weekend as we're recording, I recall. So yeah, what's the current situation? What protocol are you doing? What's working? What's not? Where are we at?
Yeah. So no more heat. I figured out that doesn't help for me. And I'm not doing physio exercises every day, which is more of a symptom of having other things that need my attention right now. But it's pretty good. I can ride about 2.5 hours low to intensity. I need to go my own pace. I tried to ride with Artur a few times. Mistake every single time. That's a really, really tough one to stick to, especially when you've taken a break and you're unfit. And if you're riding by yourself, you're going super slow. So that's a tough one, but gotta do it.
Yep.
Yeah. And the gravel race is now a gravel ride, and it is the shortest version of that race. And I'm just gonna see how I feel. Start pretty easy, but just try to enjoy it. You know, I'd still rather go than not go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that gets to the community aspect of it, right? Like kind of almost like what got you into this was the community ride in Athens, and now you know, this is like, it's still an important part, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And we talked about this before we started recording. Talk to me about just like, you know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that stress accumulates, and it's not just like these buckets where it's like, oh, over here is this life stress, and over here is like this work stress, and over here is this like athlete stress, right? Like all of those stresses are just going into the same bucket. So yeah. Talk to me about like the overflow, as we'll maybe call it.
Oh my God. So there's, I'd say in near the beginning, like the first few weeks, it was focusing on the physical injury and being stressed about that. And then we had some pretty major life stress hit us with, I'm applying for a green card in the US, and we had a big problem. And then it became, okay, now that's actually, a knee has taken a back seat, and I'm actually doing everything I can possibly think of to take care of my mental health. Every tool, every strategy that I have ever picked up, which I'm lucky to, I think I actually have a lot. So that's one thing. But basically just like in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And also what happened is my knee got really sore again because of that. And not because I was riding. because I was like, I literally haven't done anything. Like, I haven't ridden in 2 days and my knee hurts so much. And it was really scary, but I was pretty sure why. And also, I mentioned back injury that flared up. That also got pretty bad, like worse than it has been in quite a while, which was really scary also. The back is really difficult. I think that's one of the most challenging injuries you can have.
For sure.
So all of that, yeah. So, yeah, then the life stress calmed down. And we're still kind of recovering from it, honestly. Like, I've been really tired the last 2 days, which is really confusing because it's like everything's okay now, like mostly, you know, the knee's pretty good, the back's pretty good, the immigration is pretty good, but I'm just exhausted. And now I have to thinking about training again. I don't know, just got to roll with it and give it time.
And I do think that actually is pretty common, where it's like you have all these stresses, so your body's kind of in this like fight or flight, you're dealing with all of it, everything's like happening, and then when things do start calming down, I think that's when all of it kind of catches up with you and you do just like, you bonk basically.
Yeah.
Like your body's finally like, okay, we can tuck in, recover, and just relax. Yeah And I mean, you know, you are heading into kind of the start of road season. You have this team. So talk to me about even just like the mentality, like going into that, because I imagine that's also very like frustrating. So what are some of the mental tools that you've been using to kind of work through this like extreme irritation with your knee not being agreeable?
Yeah, I think a big thing is just trying not to make it more stressful than it has to be. Like, initially, I was really worried about how long this would take. And you kind of set, like, time. You just make up timelines. Even though, like, I don't know anything. But I'm like, yeah, 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, okay. Like, but I just had to let go of that. Like, I'm not thinking about when I can do exactly what kind of training right now. Because that just doesn't help. I mean, I'm like, 6 weeks in. At this point, any fitness, not any, but most of the fitness that I had is gone. So I don't know, but
it's tricky. But I mean, you've also, you know, this hasn't really happened necessarily, like you haven't been in this exact position before, but I do think like as an elite athlete, I think you do have like the mentality of like, you know, that you can get the fitness back. Like once this is like resolved, you are very aware that you are capable of getting back, and if not, you know, like possibly going even higher, right? Like this could look like you could reframe this as extended recovery time, and now your system's gonna be ready to go.
Yeah and that's a good point that reminded me, because that is something that I've been telling myself a lot, is I know how to get strong again.
Yeah,
which 2 years ago I would say I did not know that. I was not confident at all in when I would be fit, how I would be fit, whether I was doing the right thing. It felt like pure luck if I was strong. Like, it was so inconsistent. I actually look back and I'm like, the performances that I did have, I don't know where they came from.
I mean, having seen you like working pretty hard a few years back, I can say that came from a lot of hard work, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, but just like about the timing, like why then and why not earlier in the year or whatever, like no clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, you know, having, it's funny, I have a poem called Trust the Process. I used to be pretty fed up with the process, but now I think the confidence that I have in my training is I'm leaning on that and on that a lot.
I love that. And okay, I mean, where can people find that poem, get the book, etc., mention that?
Yeah, So you can find that on my Instagram. You can find it in my book, Instagram. You can search Mackenzie Myatt. I made a really complicated username, which I regret now. But yeah, the book, In Defense of Big Dreams, book of poetry and photography.
Available like, everywhere. Books are sold.
Available everywhere. Yes. Thank you.
I love it. I love it. And then before we let you go, you have to do a read of your knee poem, because that's prompted this whole thing.
They say you're supposed to spend time on things you've neglected. Do core. Reflect more. Share the lessons you've learned. Practice positive thinking. Try to recover as hard as you usually train. Trust me, I've been on the heat, stretch, breathe, walk, ice, elevate, eccentric exercises over and over, and distracting myself with podcasts about all the things I should do when I'm better. Emailing my physio late at night with a laundry list of questions about how I can make this thing go away as fast as possible. Am I doing it right? Doing nothing and thinking about everything? Sent. And then I send him another one, because I just remembered something that might be important. It hurts when I wonder if it's hurting or not. Sent it. 26 hours later, he replies, "Sounds like you're doing everything right, but you might need someone else to answer the rest of these questions. I'm not a life coach." "No, but you can fix my knee, and if we fix my knee, I can fix almost everything else. You can do other things." "Yes, but I don't want to. I want to do this thing that makes me feel like I'm flying. Or at the very least, tells me the answer to the universe and everything is a bicycle and a tailwind and sunlight. And my purpose is clear. It's just to be here, moving at the speed of a metronome, powered not by legs, but a heart full of, did you see that? Bird, river, dog, flower. Tree reaching into the future where I can forget there was a time I couldn't do this thing that makes me drop every single worry, like a deadbeat in a hurry to turn a new leaf. Emboldened, brazen with the belief that he knows what he needs to do. This thing that I do, that I can be, that I can see, is just past the horizon of this damn knee."
So good. Oh, thank you so much, Mackenzie. This is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning into the Consummate Athlete Podcast. If you want to hear more training, racing, and endurance sport advice, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. You can also subscribe to our newsletter at consummateathlete.com for a weekly dose of inspiration and advice straight to your inbox.